Welcome in, everybody, to the second episode of Table Setters, covering all things in the wide world of baseball and the MLB. As always, I'm your host, Steve, joined by my co-host, Devin, on what is and should be a national holiday. It is opening day, Devin. What's up, dude?
That's right. My favorite day of the year. Honestly, we look forward to this, even though we had a couple of rainouts. It's been a great day, and we still have a few games going. We have the Rangers and Cubs right now as we speak, as we record, and a bunch of games at the 10 o'clock hour, too. So, exciting day. Good night. I'm just glad baseball's here every day, day in and day out from now on.
It felt like it took a while to get here, but we are here. We have the games and the full start of the Korea games. Obviously, it was wetting the palate a little bit, but now we get the full slate. Like you mentioned, there's some rainouts, but we'll get the full slate of games coming tomorrow to preview that. We'll talk about that today, but we appreciate all the support that you guys gave us for the first episode and some of the feedback. If you want to continue to support the show, you can follow us at Table Setters Pod on IG and also on X. We're going to be trying to interact with you. Devin's running the Twitter machine and on Instagram. He's trying to start conversations in baseball, you know, conjecture, obviously. So Devin's been doing a really good job managing the social media. So interact with him, dudes.
Yeah, let's go. I want some comments, even if you disagree. That's the fun stuff. You know, if it's just us posting, not quite as fun. So make some comments. Tell us how you feel. Tell us what you want us to talk about.
So we'll continue to drop episodes on a weekly basis. And as you know, we're going to try to follow a format, and there's going to be some big news that falls through the cracks a little bit. Of course, we're going to touch on the big story that everybody's been talking about with Shohei Ohtani, what's going on with all the drama with, you know, it's terrible for baseball, but we want to focus on the positivity here. And doing a weekly show as compared to a daily show, it's going to be interesting to see what crops up as the big stories, Devin, because as we know, the news cycle moves very, very fast. And I think MLB likes it that way, because if this was still harboring some bad feelings with some baseball fans, it's going to rear its head again. Of course, we're going to get more updates with Ohtani, and he did not give a lot of people the maybe the satisfaction of what they would want a statement to be. But I think today, with the Dodgers going out there and doing what they do, and that's winning on the baseball field, probably quelled a lot of anxiety for Rob Manfred and the team that's sitting in New York.
Yeah, they just want something else to take over, hopefully on the positive side. A story that is going to, you know, we're not going to forget, but maybe be distracted for a little while. With the Ohtani stuff, as you said, like, some people left unsatisfied. I heard other people right away say, I completely believe him. He gave us more than we expected. I'm good. So yeah, it depends on which side you're on, what you're looking for. There's still some questions unanswered, but I'm sure there's certain things he just couldn't talk about based on, you know, there's an investigation pending and, you know, those kind of things. That's always the answer we get. Can't talk about certain things, can't take questions as the investigation is going on. How much of that is true and how much of that is just an excuse, it's tough to tell.
So we'll get more into that when we get to the meat of order, but we're going to get to that next segment right now, talking about all the games we saw here on Open Deck. All right, let's get to the action on the diamond, which was a sight for sore eyes, Devin. It was great to have the action here, kicking off the games at 3:10. As you mentioned, some of the games that were supposed to be earlier got rained out preemptively with some of the weather that was impending on the Northeast. So the Mets, I know you're looking forward to their home opener. They were delayed and moved towards Friday, which is probably the right move if you guys were in the New York area. Weather did not relent at all. But some of the games here, let's kind of discuss in the order you want to talk about them, with the Tigers sneaking out a 1-0 win against the Chicago White Sox. And the question that you posed to us, and we're going to continue to pose to our listeners, is do we think they have any chance to win in their division, or is this false gold from watching the Tigers get a really defensively solid pitching win here at 1-0? What do you think, Devin?
Yeah, well, I think leading up to the regular season, there's been some people talking a little bit about the Tigers as if they're ready to kind of make the next move, take the next step. When they hired AJ Hinch, the whole narrative was, you know, this guy is great with young teams and big prospects. And when they're talking about the prospects years ago, they're talking about Spencer Torkelson, they're talking about Riley Green. I think the exciting part for Tigers fans is the pitching looks healthy for the most part. Tarik Skubal, obviously, today looked fantastic. A lot of people trying to pick him as the possible AL Cy Young. Casey Mize has been gone for a long time. He looks like he's actually added velocity in spring. Looks better than he was before the surgery. So he's back in the fold. Made some signings with Kenta Maeda. Jack Flaherty, who looks rather good in spring as well. And they have some depth pitching-wise. Rhys Olson is there. Sawyer Gibson Long, who was fantastic the last month or two of the season last year, he's on the IL right now, and there might not be a spot for him when he's off, but if they need him when he's healthy, he'll be there, and that's a pretty nice fallback option to have. So I think the pitching is what's exciting. Their offense has been, pretty putrid for a couple years now, so I think that's going to be the X factor. I do think their pitching is going to play. The AL Central, I don't think there's any dominant team there, so I understand the talk about it. If you ask me straight up, do I think they're going to win the division? If I had to make a decision, no. I mean, if I had to put money on it, I'd go probably Twins. But I think the Tigers can make it interesting if they can find that offense. I mean, you have Colt Keith in the mix now. Riley Green and Torkelson should take the next step. Parker Meadows is an exciting young guy that, when he came up last year, there wasn't a lot of noise about him, but people are excited about him now. And again, AJ Hinch is their manager. He proved in Houston he knows how to get the most out of his young talent. We'll see if he can do it here.
Yeah, the biggest thing is the turnover and the growth from year to year, and we watch how quickly it can happen. We talked about it on episode one about some of these young players blossoming very quickly. And watching Skubal go out and do his thing on the road, I know it's not what the MLB probably wants with a 1-0 victory, but going 6 strong, he threw 83 pitches for the opening game of the season, trying to get him there. But he was efficient. I mean, the fact that he walked nobody, struck out 6, and like you said, they bridged the gap to get to what you want with a bullpen, and Skubal could be potentially a runner-up or maybe the de facto favorite to win the Cy Young in the AL, especially with the news dropping today that Gerrit Cole went on the 60-day IL, which was not unexpected, but the field's wide open in a field that was dominated by Gerrit Cole and some bigger names. You know, we know that some of the faces that we're used to, the pitching Mount Rushmore of MLB in the years that we've just seen, they're getting older. The Justin Verlanders are moving on. Like, it's opening up. Max Scherzer is opening up the year on the IL. That's not going to be the race here. Kershaw as well on the NL side of things. But Skubal there, I was impressed with what they did here. They did a lot with a little from their offense. You mentioned some of the names here. You know, Torkelson went out there and got 2 hits, but it was largely a quiet night, but they pulled through, and I'm sure there were some biting nails in Detroit for the Tigers. But even though the White Sox are not impressive, you have to go out there and win these divisional games, especially on the road to open the season. I'm sure there's a lot of good feelings coming out of opening day in Detroit.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about winning close games. I know it's one game, right? Opening day, another name for it is probably overreaction central. You know, small sample size, obviously. But if you look at young teams that get the most out of their talent, they usually win close games. The Baltimore Orioles, who we may talk about a bit today, last year they went 30-16 in one-run games. That was the best in the American League. The Marlins were very, very good in close games last year as well. And they were able to kind of have a good season as well. So if the Tigers can do that, winning the majority of those close games that they need to nail down a save late, that's big. And speaking of saves, one guy that caught my eye, I caught the end of that game live, Jason Foley, who by all means we did not think was the closer here. He looked impressive. Now, we know he had really good stuff if you followed him at all. He's a Long Island kid. We're Long Island guys. He's from Manhasset. We knew he had a shot at being in the late innings, but I think everyone was surprised to see him there today. He was dominant. He's throwing a 100-mile-per-hour sinker on the black with tons of movement. I wonder what the story is with Lang. I haven't heard. I don't know if he's a little bit hurt, sick, but he wasn't out there today. So maybe he's just fallen out of favor of the closer role. I'm guessing we'll get a little bit more of the story tomorrow or in the coming days. But, I mean, from what I saw, I think Tiger fans might be saying to themselves, stick that kid there and leave him there until there's a reason not to.
So you're saying Mrs. Foley's baby boy from Long Island is going to play a key part in Detroit. So shout out to all the wrestling fans. But yeah, for real, that's a spot where it's 1-0 and it's the opening game of the season. And if he was available, he should have been out there, or maybe he's fallen out of favor. So Tigers fans, kind of sound off in our comments and talk about how you're feeling about the bullpen here. And you know you could find gold there where it's an unassuming face. Some young players could turn out to be the best closers, best relievers in baseball. We see it happen year after year. Putting together a bullpen, a lot of front offices will talk about how it's a crapshoot. So if you find a live arm that could throw strikes in the late innings and cruise through, and again, want to preface it saying, I know it's Chicago White Sox. I know it's also, you know, a divisional game, but this is in their division, winning a game that they're going to be playing a team, you know, a 1-0 game on the road to close it out with a young arm there is impressive from the Detroit Tigers. And to not rob Skubal, as we've seen other pitchers get robbed of their wins, he walked away with a win on opening day.
Yeah, and at the very, very least, the Tigers are worth watching this year, which hasn't been necessarily true. Maybe a couple individuals, but not as a team. I feel like as a team, at least early season here, I feel like they're worth paying attention to and seeing what they've got.
So moving to the dominant story as far as on the field, it's going to be the Los Angeles Dodgers all year, and they let their talking happen on the field where this was never in doubt. Dodgers were dominant from start to finish in their opening game. Well, let's just say the Cardinals opened the game because it's the third game of the season for the Dodgers here. Don't forget, now they moved to 2-1. So the Cards in this conversation here, of course, we can wax poetic and gush over everything happening with the Dodgers, but they're the downside of what they're doing is like it's expected. They have to do this. They have to win games by 6+ runs because that's who they are, or it won't be enough. If they would have went out there and maybe lost this game, which a lot of people were talking about fading the Dodgers. I saw a lot of betting sites fading the Dodgers because of the distraction that the Ohtani stuff has provided, that maybe they wouldn't be focused on the field. That couldn't have been further from the case here, watching them go out there and do their thing. And like I said, this result was never in doubt. Their offense went out there and did their thing. Obviously, you got your faces out there, the Betts and the Freemans and Ohtani even getting out there getting two hits. So it was business as usual for the Dodgers, but that's what they want. Because if they would have went out there and lost and, say, dropped below 500, God forbid, sitting here 1-2 on March 28th, there could have been a different conversation happening today, like, uh-oh, they're slipping in the wrong direction, and we know the headlines will start to happen. So what they can do to defuse the Ohtani stuff is just win. And that's, you know, Al Davis said it best for them. Just win, baby.
Yeah, they have the right personalities in that clubhouse as leaders to not let this situation really get the best of them. Mookie, Freddie Freeman, I think that's what they, you know, even Dave Roberts, I think, does a pretty good job with the clubhouse. And yeah, I mean, winning kind of cures all. So as long as they take care of business and, you know, put the ball over the fence like we think they're going to do frequently, I'm not saying the story goes away, but it doesn't continue the narrative into a distraction kind of story. Instead,
yeah, that's the thing, dude. Like there's years where dominant teams have that lull in play. And it was possible this year that the Dodgers come out cold and they could still win 105+ games. That happens. Baseball's a marathon here. But it could have been bad timing here if they would have went on a stretch here where they lost 3 of 5 to start the season. And you'd be sitting here like, oh, well, now they're slipping in the wrong direction. The best thing they can do right now is really get Ohtani out in front of the media reading statements, but letting his play speak for itself on the field. Because all the stuff that happened with Ohtani is going to be out there. And the only way to move past it is to let it play out in the media, but also win your game so they're not talking about how it's affecting your play, like you said.
Yeah, and I mean, on the other side of the field, the Cardinals, when I'm watching them, even just seeing Miles Michaelis like being their opening day starter, obviously Sonny Gray's hurt, so that's a, you know, that's a big asterisk there. But I don't know. I just, as soon as I saw that game, I was just like, you know, take the Dodgers in that game by the spread every day of the week with Klasnow against Michaelis. I just look at the Cardinals and I don't really know what we're gonna get here. It just seems like, again, such a kind of maybe slightly above mediocre team, and most things I've seen have them slightly favored to win the NL Central. Obviously, the Brewers have taken a step back, we think. The Cubs should be in the mix. A lot of pitching questions there. But you look at the staff for the Cardinals, Michaelis, Lance Lynn, who knows what Lance Lynn we're getting. Steven Matz, I mean, Kyle Gibson, who, I mean, at times looks nasty. But he's kind of back and forth. Not a bad guy to have at the back end of the rotation by any means. He's going to eat innings. He's going to do his job. They need Sonny Gray back, and they need Sonny Gray to be the guy that he was last year. if he can be that guy, I think they have enough to win the division. But if Sonny Gray has injuries lingering, I don't think they have enough by any means.
Yeah, with the Cardinals, I feel like it's a culture thing that people are just assuming that some of these players are going to be their best selves on this team. And I think there's a lot to that. The organization has earned a lot of trust with the fan base and around the league, really, that they're going to be perennial contenders. And even on down years, it's not so down. So you put on that uniform, it's similar to what the Patriots did for many years under Belichick. It's just, you get the best out of players. I mean, tonight that we saw them today, it was all Goldschmidt. Three hits, everybody else had an offer in that category. So, you know, if you're keeping score at home, Goldschmidt had a good day, went 3-for-4, run scored, an RBI, struck out only once, and he walked away probably unhappy they lost 7-1, but he did his part. Everybody else offensively did nothing. That means your Gormans and your Arenados, they didn't show up today. And I'm not saying that they're going to do that, but if you're playing the Dodgers, you have to score runs. And watching what they did here, especially with, you know, let's be honest. I mean, the Dodgers pitching right now is in question because of the injuries. And Glasnow is not unhittable, as we know, coming back from an injury himself. To watch the Cardinals, I mean, again, it's one game. It's a small sample size. We could be sitting, you could be listening to this tomorrow, watching the Cardinals go out there and blast Dodgers pitching. It just happens. But to watch them go down quietly for really 9 innings, aside from Goldschmidt, had to be uninspiring for a fan base that has high expectations on a yearly basis. The Cardinals are, their fan base, they expect to win. And even though it's a very proud franchise in the fan base, although they didn't go out and spend $1 billion like we had with the Dodgers, they still look at the team from top to bottom. There's a lot of expectations there.
Yeah, maybe it's just me, but that whole narrative about, you know, the Cardinals getting the best of the other players and the culture thing, that's worn thin with me. I mean, I think until they win and they make some noise, like I said, I feel like they've just been a middling team, like around the playoffs, not quite in the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, I used to agree with that wholeheartedly. Like, yeah, man, the Cardinals, it's just about the name on the front of the uniform. Their fan base is the best fan base. They treat players the best, all this. That culture thing, I'm not saying there's no truth to it, but I've grown a little tired of it myself.
Well, how could you not? I mean, I feel like you're on the receiving end of the negative side of it for a while at this point. I know it's years
maybe
and decades
at
this point. We're aging ourselves, but...
Yeah, yeah, maybe it's the Mets stuff. Maybe it is in 2006. I don't know, but yeah, I'm a little sick of hearing about that. That's just me. Maybe it's Mets fans. It could be.
So we just watched, as we're watching live here, Dolis Garcia just hit a bomb here to the delight of the Globe Life Field fans, man. So Dolis is a monster, dude, but...
The delight of me as well. That's my guy, my fantasy guy right there, so I'll take it.
So, I mean, as far as the Dodgers and the Cards goes, things to watch here, obviously, the Dodgers' expectations are they have to be world beaters. And if there's a lull, you know, the expectations, heavy lies the crown of the favorites, and they couldn't be more of a favorite here. And the last thing they needed was the Ohtani drama to start the season. But all's well that ends well, assuming they win the World Series this year. But if things go wrong in Tinseltown, dude, it's going to go down in a blaze of fire.
No doubt about it. And speaking of superstars with expectations, the Yankees game, man, I thought a hell of a win for that team. I was following it loosely because I was kind of watching Baltimore. I was watching Logan Webb and the Giants against Darvish and the Padres kind of bouncing around. And I saw the Yanks went down 4-0 early. My first thought was like, Nestor's, you know, opening day starter. It's a little weak. He's not the guy he was 2 years ago. And then I will give him credit. I was all prepared to jump on here and be like, listen, Nestor Cortez is a one-year guy. He had that all-star year, and he hasn't been great since. Credit to him for going down 4-0 and then kind of getting it together. I think towards the end, he retired, I want to say, 12 out of 13 guys to finish and kept his team in the game. And then credit to the Yankees offense. I think Juan Soto was very critical of the Padres last year while in that uniform, that they would sometimes just lay down and die. I think you're going to see something different with the Yankees. You can see the excitement in Aaron Judge's eyes with Soto there, with Verdugo there, who is a guy apparently that Judge recruited for like years to be a Yankee. They all made some big plays, some heady plays. Obviously, Soto, I think, had an RBI in the game and also the huge throw to home to get the guy out at home, the tying run. Just the way they won that game, the comeback, the defense at the end. If I'm a Yankee fan, which I am very much not, but if I was, I'd be super excited about what I saw today. That's something you can build off of from the very get-go, especially against the Houston Astros.
Absolutely. And the thing is, watching that game, you've seen that script before. Yankee fans have seen that game fall into the void. They're down 4-0 early. They watch a Houston crowd be whipped them to a frenzy with the offense and watching Framber Valdez mow them down. And the thing that was the most frustrating was the opportunity to score and then grounding into three double plays. And that, you know, for me as a Yankee fan, here we go again. Being in Houston, losing at least two out of three, it's just kind of the things that's been happening over the course of the last 5-6 years that they just have our number. And watching the game unfold, you mentioned it feeling different. There's an energy there, and we don't want to put all the praise on Soto because of that. But as you mentioned, made two very big plays, most notably end of the game, a lot of pressure there, tying run, rounding third, sliding in a perfect throw. Shout out to Trevino for the tag he made. They wound up reviewing the play, but indisputable, there was an absolute tag that was laid down because of the throw from Soto. He looked pumped. Judge looked pumped. Verdugo looked pumped. The bench was energized. And then watch them piece together, as you mentioned before, what was could have been a devastating start to the season, not just because, okay, you lose one game and that's fine. But if Nestor Cortes would have blown up and he threw 33 pitches in the first inning and he looked tired, he looked worn out. If you would have to go to the bullpen in Houston in your first inning, that kind of blows up your plans for the rest of what Aaron Boone had laid out. The fact that he lasted to where he did, having 66 pitches going into the fifth, it's remarkable him bearing down. And his line doesn't look as bad as you probably expected. I mean, 4 earned runs, struck out 5, and he grinded that out. And I really appreciate just that feeling. It's gritty. It's they have some versatility, but also resilience at this point. And they're facing a lot of injuries as well. They're coming into the season a little bit hobbled. You mentioned Nestor getting the nod. It's the first time since Gerrit Cole has been here that he's not having the honor of being the opening day starter. And I understand that it's not what it used to be with opening day. And sometimes fans will put a lot more on it than it is for the actual player. But for Nestor Cortes, there's a lot of pressure on that, because even though you're opening on the road, it's in a hostile environment. This isn't opening in, you know, I'm not going to rip on him because it isn't a rival, but it's not opening in Tampa or Toronto or Baltimore like it's been. This is Houston. They've had your number. It's been a house of horrors for the Yankees. For them to go in there and pull a victory out of the clutching jaws of defeat, from being down 4-0 to win 5-4 and closing it out with Holmes and just Loaisiga doing his job and watching what Hamilton do with his hold, I couldn't have been more impressed and excited, because Juan Soto showed up and was exactly who they are. And they won despite them not firing on all cylinders. That's the most exciting part for me.
Yeah, that exactly. They found a way to win in a game that just didn't seem like it was going to be theirs. And I think they're going to have to do that for the first couple months of the season here as they're banged up, especially with the Gerrit Cole stuff. The rotation is paper thin. We don't know what Carlos Rodon's going to look like. They're going to have to just find ways to win where they make a bunch of plays. They make one more play than the other team did. I would say, not to be negative, but the only thing I saw in that game where I would be looking for possible change down the road for the Yankees is Clay Holmes looked very, very hittable. And there were times last year too where he just looked like a guy that should be an eighth inning guy that's being thrust into the closer role. And again, it's one game, so overreaction central. I get it. Like I said before, that's what we do on this day. But
watch the other side of things. Hader comes in the tie game. No, down by one.
Yeah.
Watching how unhittable he is. And
right.
Yeah, he got a lot of money. Yeah, he's making the most money that a reliever is this year outside of Edwin Diaz. I know he has the deferred money and all that. But watching a guy like Hader look absolutely unhittable.
Right.
It just makes you wonder, why not go out there and invest in the bullpen when he's there? I know he has character issues. He's had issues. They were referencing on the broadcast that he doesn't like having more than a 3-out save. He outright refused his last couple of starts in San Diego, that he just didn't want to do that. And that probably rubs the analytics side of Aaron Boone the wrong way. And there would be a lot of butting heads, but watching him go out there and just be, I mean, we had flailing bats. That wasn't the case with Clay Holmes. And that will eventually rear its head, where you're going to have to go. If you're going to be competitive in the AL, you're going to have to get out and have a lights out bullpen. And they've had a bullpen that's been great top three for the last how many years. They haven't been able to utilize it in the playoffs deep, but their bullpen hasn't really been the issue. But I agree with you. Clay Holmes looks largely unhittable. And maybe we have a guy like Loaisiga rise up and become the guy we expect he could be and can be the closer. But right now, it's Clay Holmes' job to lose.
Yeah, I mean, if they're in it at the All-Star break, if there's an upgrade somewhere, I think that's something they would need to look at. I think Soto bailed him out today. If he doesn't make that throw home, not only do the Astros tie it, I think they probably end up walking off that game in that inning at that point. At that point, you know, Holmes isn't pumped up like he ended up being. He would be beat down, and it's a different game at that point. But props to the Yankees for winning that. A division rival of theirs that I also watched a lot, partly because it was the first game on, was the Baltimore Orioles. Place was electric. I don't know if you caught it, like, just loud, and obviously
let's talk Baltimore, dude. Like, I have to, we have to talk Baltimore.
Yeah, we love talking about this team
in Baltimore. God damn, dude. Like, what winning does, like, if you're an owner and you're not investing in your teams and you want to be one of those franchises that pockets a lot of the money, how do you not watch what's happened in Baltimore the last 2 years and just say, let's bring that here? And I'm calling out, you know, the Miamis and the Oaklands of the world. How do you not invest in your team to get what you have here in such a short period of time? Because they haven't really won anything yet. It's the appeal of that they could. I know they have a division championship that they're going to have the banner there. I love it. Baltimore is excited. This is a baseball city, largely dominated by football the last few years. But I was in a layover yesterday flying from Carolina. I did the Baltimore layover there. A lot of O's hats, a lot of orange and black around the city of Baltimore. And that's exciting, dude. And to watch what the ownership has done here, just a round of applause, because this is investing what you have. And it's going to triple, quadruple the money that you invest in the team. It's always baffling to me to be okay with mediocrity that so many franchises are okay with.
Well, not to mention it's new, officially new ownership now. And David Rubenstein, who was up in the booth, I got to listen to him a little bit talking to the play-by-play guys. But so here's the thing. Their previous owners were a little tight with the money. Obviously did a nice job letting their player, you know, the general manager, put together a very young squad, and it's still coming. Like, there's still so much that's not there yet. But now you wonder with the new ownership if they can have a combination of all that young talent ready to help and maybe throwing some money around. Who knows? We'll see what they do. But for a long time, Baltimore has kind of been known as that team. Like, when they do have young talent that rises up, they kind of know they might not be there in so many years, such as Manny Machado. Like, we knew when his contract was up, he wasn't going to be a Baltimore Oriole. They weren't going to, you know, spend that money. Hopefully that changes under this ownership. You know, they're an East Coast team in a pretty big market, great ballpark. So I'm excited about, there's so much to be excited about, but that play, they came out swinging today. Corbin Burns was phenomenal. And if you're a Baltimore Oriole fan sitting in that crowd, I mean, that's got to be maybe the best opening day you've seen.
So if you want to really make your fan base love you, there was a clip going around on Instagram and on Twitter of the new owner, and correct me on his name, Rubenstein is his name, right?
I believe so, yes.
So he was in the booth, as you mentioned, and now a famous, maybe infamous quote that's going to go down in Baltimore lore is there a mercy rule in baseball? That's going to go down, and a lot of Baltimore Twitter has gone around wearing this as a badge of honor. Maybe we'll see some merchandise that's being made and sold outside the ballpark, Camden Yards dropping that line, because that's a rallying cry. Or it could be a detraction where it's a notepad level quote where and other teams will kind of take that and run with it. But right now, good vibes are here. But point is, with Rubenstein being out there, he's having a good time, and he's buying beers for the fan base here. And I have a clip here to listen to you how excited he is to be a part of the fan base.
Yo, listen up. Yo. I want to introduce myself. I'm Mike Arrighetti, one of the new owners of the O's. This is my best friend, Smitty, also a new owner of the O's. And this is Mitch. We're buying everybody a beer.
Let's go, O's! Don't you just love to see that, like, you get the same vibe when Cohen first took over the Mets. Like, you feel that he has this passion for the fan base, and it's infectious. You want to be in the ballpark. And even goes back to the fan initiated endeavors they did with the bird bath section, like little things like that, they're leading the charge on. And it's an exciting game day experience.
Yeah. And to clarify, so Rubenstein's the main guy. And then I guess there's a big ownership group. I think they said it includes guys like Grant Hill, former NBA player.
And Cal Ripken Jr. is involved too, as well.
Yeah, they really brought him back in the fold. They made an effort to kind of do that as well. But there's some big names in that ownership group from kind of all different walks of life. So it's pretty cool to see, man. And the Baltimore Orioles are coming. So there'll be a story all year. You still are waiting for Jackson Holliday and Coby Mayo and on and on and on. There's a lot more guys still to come. So that's going to be a story that's just ongoing.
So, and finishing up the meat of the order here, we want to talk about Royce Lewis, who homered in this game, going 2-for-2. But the question here is the injury with him straining his quad and bringing up some nightmares of maybe becoming Byron Buxton 2.0. Your thoughts on this? Because he has been a guy that's been, I feel like we've been talking about the arrival of Royce Lewis for quite some time, and to watch him go out there and do his thing and then be hampered by an injury shortly after that. That is the Byron Buxton blueprint that we've become used to.
That's exactly Byron Buxton. Every time he comes back, he's really good. And you're like, holy, this guy's so good. Like, the injuries have not made him worse. He's still so good. And then the next day, you're talking about the new injury. So it's just a shame to see. And obviously in the same uniform, Twins fans have to be sick watching this stuff. Like, you're probably just watching every time one of those guys are at the plate. You know, you're just hoping they don't get hurt. I remember feeling that way as a Met fan way back in the, mid-2000s with Jose Reyes, when he would pull his hamstring, you know, one out of every two sprints to first. And you're like, this guy's so electric. He's so fun to watch, but I'm just nervous every time he's running that he's going to get hurt. It's a shame, man. Opening day, like, he pops a homer. He's 2-for-2. He's looking like the stud that he is. I know he was a super popular fantasy pick this year to kind of go nuts and a possible 30 home run guy. Like, he's got all the tools, a high draft pick. He might've been number one overall draft pick. I can't exactly remember, but like, this guy's been hyped from the jump, and for good reason. And he's backed it up when he's actually been around. Hopefully the quad strain is a grade one. That's what you're hoping for right now. I haven't heard an update on that, but kind of limped off the field. You could tell he knew it right away. So it sucks.
Yeah, Royce Lewis was the first overall pick in Minnesota in the 2017 draft. So he's been around at this point. So
yeah,
he made his debut back in 2022, but he's been kind of waiting at this point. And it could be one of those situations where this is the year and this could just be a blip on the radar. But as you mentioned, the PTSD from Minnesota fans that are saying, we've seen this story happen with Byron. And, you know, and being a fantasy baseball player myself and Byron Buxton, it's always that allure of the new season, a new sheen is on the field and being like, okay, this is the year. But sometimes it's just not. And I don't know, I'm not saying it's the right time to move on, but it's like, you have to look into why these injuries are happening and find the source. I'm not putting blame on anybody, but as we mentioned, sometimes it's a institutional issue that you have to figure out why this is happening. What's the preparation like? What is the preventative measures you can put in place that this won't happen? Because we know the things that both these players have in common is they both play that speedy style game that you mentioned before with Jose Reyes, where maybe it's something to do with the field that they have in Minnesota. I don't know. I mean, I'm not putting anything out there, but there's got to be something to this.
I mean, it's not even just those two guys we named, the Buxtons and the Royce Lewis. Like, even like an Alex Kirilloff, who's kind of, you know, a solid prospect as well. I feel like he's, for the last 2 years, has been in and out of the lineup. And again, when he's in the lineup, he's impressive. You're like, wow, this kid's good. He's a nice young piece. I think he had wrist issues, which is a tough one to, you know, can kind of linger. That's the other thing. Quads, hamstrings, calves, those things linger. Like, they tend to, you know, you rehab them, you do physical therapy, you build back up. They tend to come back around, especially in a 162-game season. Like, when you get to July and August and it's super hot and it's hard not to get dehydrated, things pop. So, again, not trying to be negative here. It's just something, when I saw that, you got to talk about it, because it's just eerie that this seems to be what happens to these star young offensive players for the Minnesota Twins in recent history.
So looking at some of the milestones, as we promised last week to preview what's coming up in 2024, some of the names, and we mentioned last week that some of the old guard has disappeared. So the leaderboards as far as active players goes has shifted. And someone we've talked about is Freddie Freeman, who had a pretty good day today, and he's chopping off the numbers, and he's looking to surpass the original Billy Hamilton on the all-time hits list. He needed 51 hits to crack the top 200. He got three of those today, or two of those today, and now sits at 49 hits to crack the 200. So other notes here, Paul Goldschmidt is trying to join the 2000 hit club, 91 hits to go from the milestone. He got three today. So he's sitting here checking off boxes for inevitably going to be a Cooperstown induction, in my opinion. But we also have notable players approaching 1,500 hits, which is including Mookie Betts, Starling Marte, Justin Turner, Giancarlo Stanton, Nick Castellanos, and Salvi Perez. Some big hit milestones here. And I know it goes under the radar because some of these players, it's assumed that they'll do this. But longevity is a big thing in baseball. We just mentioned Royce Lewis and Byron Buxton not be able to be on the field. That's a big part of why these guys are able to do what they can do, is because they're there and healthy. And we're watching some greatness happening with Freddie and Paul and all that good stuff that we're seeing happening over in LA and also now St. Louis.
Yeah, and then on the home run side, I mean, this caught me off guard the other day. I saw an interview with Giancarlo Stanton, and like the little footnote under him was current active Major League Baseball home run leader. I was like, oh, wow, because there's been so much negativity around him. So to see a stat like that was kind of surprising for me. Maybe other people are well aware of that. But then another guy that's trying to get into that 400 home run club is Mike Trout, who popped one over the fence today. And that's, when you look at how close he is, it's a really good bet that could go either way. It seems like Vegas designed it. He needs 32, well, going into today, he needs 32 home runs to get to the 400 home run club. Again, hit his first today, so he's down and he needs 31 more. And I think the biggest question, him, you just talked about staying on the field. In recent history, he has had trouble with that. I think he's super motivated, but in a weird way, I think he's going to be unhappy very quickly with his situation in Anaheim. Again, we've talked a little bit about how he just has been the guy where he's, you know, the ultimate team player, super loyal, but everyone has a breaking point. And if this team goes down the tubes early, it's got to be so frustrating to him. Like, he, weeks before spring training was done, was quoted as saying, like, yeah, I want our ownership to hopefully sign more free agents. And they basically did nothing afterward. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if he can get those 32 this year. That's such a tough way to go, over or under.
Yeah, and I thought it was a quintessential Mike Trout game where he hits a home run and feels like he's fully back, and they lose 11-3. That's where the memes come from.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's who he is. And the other frustration I saw from him, because I did watch some of the game, Cedric Mullins homered, and he went to Rob. It was, you know, just inches away from Trout's glove, and the frustration on his face was just, you don't really see that. And he's a competitive dude. You see the emotion come out of him, but this was different. And I feel like there is going to be a lot of that this year, especially being in Baltimore, that's rocking. They're excited to be there. And I'm not saying that the fans at Angel Stadium are not going to be excited to see them when they eventually go there, but there's something different. And it's got to be frustrating to watch with the Orioles and what they were, because Trout's been in the league long enough to know that this wasn't always the case in Baltimore. He's played in front of a lot of empty seats. To watch this team draft well, invest in the team, the new ownership, there's an electricity that's happening in Maryland for the Orioles, and for now they're the second fiddle in a city that they've always been the second fiddle in, and he's not even the biggest star in the city anymore because of what the Angels have done, and or lack of what they've done, that Ohtani has taken on the lion's share of the spotlight, and now we watch Mike Trout, and the best years, hopefully it's not shriveled up in obscurity that we're going to be seeing, because it's for a baseball fan, it's devastating to think about the lack of general spotlight we see on this guy, who is a generational talent, one of the best to ever suit up and play baseball. It's largely going unnoticed because, let's be honest, it's an East Coast bias that happens here, especially on our end. It's on the West Coast, but he happens to play for a West Coast team that largely nobody cares about, and a lot of the fans in Anaheim, California area don't care themselves. So it's just it's infuriating for me, and I can't imagine how it is for him, especially when you have a World Series contender in Philadelphia that would love to have his bat at Citizens Bank Park.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine, like, it's the equivalent if you look at other sports. Like, imagine in the NBA, LeBron James or Steph Curry, like, just barely ever made the playoffs in their whole career. Like, are just putting up crazy numbers, but are almost never, ever in the playoffs. It's hard to see them on TV. Imagine that, like, that's bizarro worlds. Mm-hmm. Like, the complete opposite happens. So that would be the comparison I make. And I'm just like, usually I hate when players kind of force their way out of places. Like, I hate that culture that has happened in professional sports where it seems like at first it was the NBA and it's now kind of creeped into other sports as well, where it seems like anyone can really force their hand if they really want to. I'm usually super against that. With Mike Trout, I'd be all for it. I really would. I would be all for it if he decided, you know what, I'm not getting any younger here. Like, I shouldn't wait too long to go see if the grass is greener on the other side somewhere, you know, before it gets too late. I'm begging him to do it. I think it's going to get ugly in Anaheim this year.
Yeah, make some noise and get out of there. And I think he's always been the model citizen, and that's, in his case, made him a lovable face of baseball. but it's kind of gone against him. And I think he's been quiet, and he's been the model soldier for everything that the Angels want to build. But eventually, Father Time is undefeated, and he is mm-hmm. the time has continued to fall through the hourglass for him. And he only has a certain amount of years left to play at a high level. The last thing we'd want is a Mike Trout retirement tour where he's a quarter of the player he used to be. At least right now, he's still one of the best players in the game when healthy. So let's do it. Let's get him back out there. And if it's Philadelphia or it's somewhere else, maybe even Baltimore, you know what I mean? Like, figure it out and get him out of there so we can have him on the stage here. We know that MLB, if you put your tinfoil hat on, that they probably would want him to play in one of these markets, that he's going to be spotlighted in October. Even the expanded playoffs, and the Angels can't even sniff that. It's frustrating.
No, and that division's tough, so they're not going to sniff it. Like, they have no business competing with the Mariners, the Astros, and the Rangers. So, like, again, like I said, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know.
So as the season unfolds, we'll keep you guys updated on all this stuff as they continue to add their names in history. So it's going to add an extra layer of intrigue to the on-field action. Not that it really needs it, because even today we're watching this game between Chicago and Texas. We watched Wyatt Langford get his first hit, watched the ball be thrown into the dugout. It was an infield single, so who would have thought all the pop that guy has first hit? That's what baseball is, man. As they say, like, you can't predict it. His first hit will be remembered as a infield single for Wyatt Langford. So absolutely love it. As Evan Carter himself runs it deep to the warning track. So the young players in baseball, as we talked last week, it's just so exciting. I know we're talking about the old guard here and appreciating what they've done. I can't remember a time that, maybe it's recency bias, I can't remember a time we've had as much young talent contributing at such a big level and becoming big stars. Cause there's a lot of Evan Carter's jerseys in the stands right now watching, because people are excited about what they're bringing to the table.
There's no doubt about it. I just love where we are here. Like, it's easier to follow these guys now. And when you know they are getting to the majors quicker, for the most part, not completely, but for the most part, or they have the chance to get there quicker, I think it's easier to follow them and be motivated to follow them to see where they are. And it's even, to me, it's trickling into the college game. Maybe it's just me because I'm kind of a crazy person as far as baseball goes. But like, I've posted a few times on X this week about some guys named Travis Bezzana, Charlie Condon, Chase Burns. These are super high level college prospects for this year's draft. If you've never watched what they're doing, go ahead and search them. You can find them easily. But again, like, you wonder, these guys that are in college right now, how long? They're not even drafted yet, but could we be watching one of these guys, one of those guys I just named, in the majors in a year or two? Like, I don't think that's out of the question anymore. And I think that's really cool.
Absolutely. So we're going to move into our next segment here, Take a Pitch, Swing Away, and talk about what we saw in the world of baseball this week. All right, Devin, I'll let you take the lead on this, and we'll give our little anecdotes on how we feel with some of these storylines that we're seeing emerge in the first week of the MLB season.
All right, so just a quick reminder, or in case you did not join us last week, this segment is called Take a Pitch or Swing Away. Take a Pitch is basically selling the idea that we say, and then Swinging Away is the buy, or the buy signal. All right, so the first one I will give to you is this. The defending National League champions, the Arizona Diamondbacks, signed Jordan Montgomery this week. This makes them the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the NL West.
I'm taking this pitch. I think the Giants did a lot more, and I like what the Giants have done. I still think they're neither one of these teams are going to be even close. I think the Dodgers are probably going to win the division by 6.5, maybe 7 games, but I do believe that the Giants are the biggest threat if they have to pick one.
Okay, fair. I'm going to swing away at this one. I think the Diamondbacks are the biggest threat. I agree with you that I don't think they should sniff the Dodgers, but if some kind of injuries rear their ugly head in L.A., I think the Diamondbacks would be the most ready to pounce on that spot. You got to give them the respect. They made it to the World Series last year. Another team with a young, exciting core led by Corbin Carroll. The pitching staff, if you look at it now, is legit. Like, I don't think I noticed how good it was. Eduardo Rodriguez hopefully is not out too long. Hopefully they can hold down the fort without him. I think they have some nice pieces there. Okay, so the next one, take a pitch or swing away. The AL Central race will come down to the Twins and Guardians once again. We kind of alluded to this earlier when we talked about the Tigers, but go ahead.
I'm going to take a hesitant swing at this only because I do like what we saw with the pitching from Detroit. but I'm not going to let that blind me from the fact that I do think the class of the division right now is Minnesota. I think they're the favorite, but I also think the Guardians have a shot. As we see, the Central's always up in the air. I think that right now we're looking at this being a two-team race with Detroit making a lot of strides, but I do think that the Twins and Guardians are the favorites as far as the race goes.
Fair. I'm going to take the pitch here because I do think Detroit is going to be in the mix. Like I know earlier I said, like, if you make me make a decision, I'll say I'll probably Twins and Guardians. But to be honest, I think the Tigers pitching staff is better than both of those teams. I mean, the offense is the unknown, but I'm going to go ahead and say it's either going to be the Tigers replacing one of those teams in that race, or maybe it's a three-team race. That would be exciting as well. Okay, so the next one, the Reds, the Cincinnati Reds, preseason injuries will bury them early in the National League Central, early on in the season.
I'm going to take this pitch. I think that division's wide open. As we mentioned before, Milwaukee's probably the favorite. St. Louis is there. But there really is no determined powerhouse in this division. They're going to play a lot of games against Pittsburgh. They're going to play the Cubs. They're going to be in a lot of games. I think they're going to tread water with the preseason injuries. And when things kind of get even, they're going to have a shot as just as any of these teams to win that division.
Agreed. Not much to add. I'll just echo the sentiment that division is completely wide open and, you know, maybe the island of mediocrity.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Next one. This became a little bit of a story, mostly on social media, but I feel like some TV stations even picked it up. Baseball Reference released their division projections or standings projections earlier this week, and they had the New York Yankees finishing dead last in the American League East Division at only 72 wins. So are you buying or selling that projection?
Selling it so far away, tossing into the river somewhere. I just don't see how this projection model. I understand that I saw the scope of it, that their maximum right. amount of wins, I think, would be 85. At a worst case scenario, it'd be 72. That's the thing if the sky was falling. And understanding where that came from, the measure of it, there has not been a world that I've lived in that the Yankees have lost that many games. And I think what they've done this year, even with injuries, we saw last year was a disaster and they won 81 games. It can't be much worse. They're a better team than they were last year as far as construction goes on opening day. If worst case happens for this team, we're looking at the same season, 83 wins, 82 wins we saw. I can't see a world they ever get close to winning 72 wins. They are a much better team than Boston. Much better team.
I agree with you. I'd say the only if Gerrit Cole doesn't come back at all, if something happens, there's a setback, or he does come back and he's right back out and that's it. I could see this happening, maybe more than 72 wins, but I could see a last place finish just if the Red Sox are a little better than we thought, which I do think they're going to be better than most people are giving them credit for in Boston. But still, with all that being said, I think that's, especially with the energy we saw today from the Yankees.
72 wins. We got to think, like, again, I'm sitting here 35
years old. Like the Angels last year.
We've never seen that ever. And as far as they could sleepwalk through a season and still win 80 games, it always is the case.
Yeah, that was wild to see, especially the Baseball Reference. They're like a respected group, so I think everyone was a little caught off guard there. It wasn't like Joe Schmo on Twitter.
I think it was a misunderstanding of the metric of how it was being measured. I think it was pulled out of context, but you know, some of those things spit out weird numbers, and you have to take them as you, and as we are. Everyone can't use it as this be all end all.
Okay, so next one. This is another big signing, but this time from a player that was already with this team. So I guess an extension, you would call it. Will Smith of the Dodgers, his 10-year, $140 million deal with the Dodgers is a steal for the Dodgers.
I'm going to swing away with that. At that, I think that he has been a pivotal part of that lineup, undersold by a lot of the star power that's there. I think he's going to be a huge piece. If they want to do what they are supposed to be doing this year, Will Smith has to go out there and compete on a daily basis. I think he's a huge part of this team. And I think we're going to watch money be thrown around for some of these catching positions. I think Adley is probably going to get double that. And who's to say if Adley winds up being what Will Smith is, I think he'd be happy with his production. So yeah, I think it is a steal.
Yeah. I went back and forth on this one. I'll agree though. I do think it's a steal, at least in the short term. The only thing I worry about is the long term. You know, catchers sometimes age a little quicker than other players, because of the knees, you know, the crouching. And you could say, like, oh, well, Will Smith can DH. Well, I mean, you got Shohei Ohtani. Like, so I don't know how much DHing he's going to be able to do to save his knees. But like you said, he has been their cleanup hitter. He is their cleanup hitter. So he's super important. So I think in the short term, it's a steal. In the long term, I don't know how great it's going to look, like, say, 7-8 years down the road. But I get it, though. I think it's kind of, people are starting to follow the Braves model of extending their own players and kind of getting them for a little bit of a bargain.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing for Will Smith, good thing for the Dodgers. And maybe we're going to see a renaissance of sorts for the catcher position right now, but get your money while you can. And Will Smith is secure for life, $140 million, 10-year deal. He's set where he is and not have to worry about where he's going to be working for the next decade.
Okay. So last one in this segment, we talked about the Orioles earlier and what an electric factory that stadium was today and how exciting that franchise is for multiple reasons. One thing, this is something I was thinking about, again, posted a little bit on X about it. So here's the statement. Craig Kimbrell will cost the Orioles first place in the AL East. And as a footnote, we mentioned it earlier, the Orioles were an AL best 30-16 in one-run games last season with Felix Bautista, for the most part, as their closer until he got hurt.
So I'm going to swing away at this. I think with Bautista last year, he was such a huge part of what they were doing. He was a huge part of how effective they were late in games, being, as you mentioned, that number 30-16 in one-run games last season. Craig Kimbrell is a shell of his former self. Maybe he goes out there and can find a way to tap into the fountain of youth, and maybe just being a part of what the Orioles are building gets him to the old Craig Kimbrell that we're used to, dominating in Boston or dominating in Atlanta, being that guy. Unfortunately for the Orioles, they're going to have to go out there if they want to compete and find a live arm. It might be in-house. They might have somebody in there that, because of Felix Bautista, as you mentioned before, they discovered him, you know? So it's possible that they have an arm out there that they can find in their pool of riches that they have in the draft prospects, that they can find an arm here. I do think the Orioles are not going to win the AL East. I do think there's a chance that they're sitting going into the playoffs as a wild card. They're going to be a contender for the World Series. I think that what they've been building there, it's hard to go back to back in the AL East, and especially with the competition you have, as we mentioned, the Yankees, although Baseball Reference will say they're winning 72 games this year, but let's not sleep on Tampa and Toronto, you know? So I think, yep. I think if Baltimore, they probably would be okay. Not even, if they got half the production that they got from Felix Bautista from Craig Kimbrell, I just don't see that happening in a world where Craig Kimbrell and pitching, it deteriorates very quickly. And we've kind of seen what Craig Kimbrell has been in the last few years, and he's only a year older.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm swinging away as well. I think Kimbrell is, at the time, it was like a good signing. Like, I think everyone's like, okay, yeah, you needed to go do that because of the Bautista injury. Listen, Cano was really, really, really good in the eighth last year for them. But when he was kind of thrust into the closer role when Felix Bautista went out, wasn't the same guy, which is why I'm sure they felt like it was necessary to go get a closer and not just a, you know, another high-end reliever that could, you know, take Cano's spot and Cano could go to the ninth. I'm going to say it's going to end up being the Blue Jays here, and that the difference maker is who they have in the ninth inning. Don't get me wrong. There's been times I've watched Kimbrell in the last 1 or 2 years where he's still looked unhittable when he's his best self. There's other times where it looks like the other team is celebrating as soon as he comes in because he just doesn't have it that night. He seems to be one of those guys nowadays who makes everything interesting. Every game, there's no easy saves. Reminds me of like an Armando Benitez back in the day with the Mets, where it's like, all right, he's got electric stuff, but he finds a way to make everything interesting and blows games what seems like once a week. So I think that ends up being a huge story in Baltimore. I just think there's too many people all over them, picking them, and I don't think enough people are thinking about the Kimbrell situation, the closer situation. I think that ends up being their bugaboo this year.
If we're playing matchmaker, and I know he just went down with an injury today, or he wasn't available today because of his lat injury, he's rehabbing from it. David Bednar from Pittsburgh, if they're not competitive, Bednar was pretty solid last year. I think he obviously has not played in the competitive games we're looking for, being the fact that he plays in Pittsburgh. But I think he could be a good trade partner that wouldn't really ask for that much. And we know that they have a slew of riches in the prospect farm. I think it works for both sides of things. So I would keep an eye out for them to be early favorites, even before the trade deadline, to make a trade for a reliever. for some of these teams that are going to be looking to move on, because I know a lot of teams are probably looking to link up with Baltimore based on the pool of riches you have to choose from, because even their lower tier prospects are better than most of the top of the line prospects in most systems.
Yeah, I could see that too. And who knows, maybe the Yankees and Orioles end up going after the same guy as far as like a closer. We already talked about Clay Holmes maybe being better suited for an eighth inning role. So it could be division rivals trying to figure out their way to get their hands on a elite closer. Obviously, the Orioles have more to give than anybody.
So let us know what you guys think about this swing away. If you have any comments, you guys can go to Instagram or X at Table Setters Pod. Tell us what you think, whether you vehemently disagree or agree with us. Hop in the comments. Have a conversation with us. We're going to move to our next segment here with Just a Bit Outside with the worst take in baseball we heard in the following 7 days. All right, Devin, there are lousy takes and then there's this one, you know, so I'll let you take the lead. You and I were texting about this because, you know, we heard some rumblings of the positivity, God forbid, from the Mets fan base about signing JD Martinez on really was 20 cents on the dollar. I think that most people will be very happy with the money he got here. You got protection from Pete Alonso. We are excited to sit here and really look at the Mets offense as a better team than we last left it. I understand shock jock radio. They have to find ways to make stories and have conversation, but this is a little bit too far for me to the point where it's like, how could you even justify some of the stuff that C-Mac from WFAN in New York was making? It's insane.
I mean, do you want to play the clip first and then I can go on, or do you want me to talk a little
bit? I'll play the clip first so everyone can hear. Okay. So just so you guys know, this was right after JD Martinez had signed his free agent deal with the New York Mets. As we talked about, all the Scott Boras clients were looking for an extensive amount of money. The Mets got him at a discount rate. They picked him up in the bargain bin, and JD Martinez is going to go out there. And like we mentioned, sleepwalking through production, this dude can go out there, put his batting gloves on, and hit 30 home runs. That's how good JD Martinez is. But let's hear what C-Mac had to say on WFAN.
The plan, or they finally got to a number they were willing to avoid the plan.
Okay, but even if it's that, why is that a bad thing?
No, it's not that it's necessarily a bad...
They got him 70 cents on the dollar, hit 33 bombs a year
great,
ago.
It's great, and I think it vastly improves the team. But now what do you... I mean, these were questions that had to be asked. This is a one-year deal. This doesn't help the plan at all. We would talk... I mean, the plan has been the focus of the offseason. I've been arguing for Montgomery. I could see how that helps this and the plan.
Yeah.
All this does is help this season and take away at bats from a guy you've told me it's important to get a look at. Now you're not going to get a look at him. This move doesn't help the plan. This is a complete deviation from everything else we've heard all offseason. And that's fine. I don't disagree with some of your points, but excuse me if I don't, you know, applaud them for their knack they had to suddenly get out of the plan and their adaptability. To me, it sounds like they got scared of the plan.
You finally have real protection for Pete. You've made the lineup. You've lengthened it. It's certainly more cyclical. And I would venture to guess that there's going to be 2 or 3 months when we look back on the 2024 season where JD Martinez, in terms of power, OPS, those things, is the absolute best hitter on the Mets, mm-hmm. because you know Lindor's going to have a month or two, probably early, where he's cold. You know, Pete's going to strike out a little bit. Nimmo's fairly consistent. But they brought in something that they needed. And the Mets, at least now, and I couldn't say this a week ago.
Yeah.
Going into the season with Diaz, with Senga hopefully on the mend, Severino pitching well, you got some sticks. I mean, at least there's some real optimism.
All right, so we heard the back and forth there, C-Mac making it clear he's not a fan, and he emphasized the fact that he doesn't like the Mets aren't staying according to plan because it's taking away at-bats from young players. And I'll let you take the lead to being the Met fan here.
All right, a couple things. First of all, I find it funny that last week our bad take was from the other guy on the good side of the argument there, Brandon Tierney. We were on him last week for basically calling Juan Soto overrated, and now at this time I think he's on the better end of it. By the way, we're not trying to pick on WFAN. I happen to listen to them a lot. And every once in a while, I hear something where I just can't imagine that they're not just saying it to try to get clicks. And C-Mac, I usually like, to me, he usually seems like a more reasonable, level-headed guy as a Yankee fan. I don't listen to his overnight show very much or at all, really. But like, he used to be on with Carton and Evan as kind of one of the sidekicks. So I was surprised to hear it. And you can kind of hear in that clip that I feel like he's kind of reaching a little bit and grasping for straws and stumbling over his words a little bit, because I don't even think he's buying what he's saying. He refers to the plan over and over and never really says what he means by it. Here's the thing. Mark Vientos is not the plan of the New York Mets. Yes, they wanted to get a look at him. It was important for him to get at bats, which he did all spring. Okay, so not signing JD Martinez until after spring allowed them to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. And I think what they saw from Mark Vientos was the following. Last year when he was up, he was kind of playing sporadically. And he was a guy who looked like a low 200s hitter with a lot of pop. So he was going to hit some home runs, but he was going to strike out a lot. And I think a lot of people know that there are players where if they don't play every day, you don't see their maximum potential. So they let Mark Vientos play every day in spring. Let's actually see his full potential. He was the same exact guy that he was when he was playing sporadically, a low 200s hitter who swings and misses a ton with great pop. And when you see him hit those home runs, you're like, oh, wow. He also doesn't have a glove. So if you're going to sit there and say the plan, they're just not following the plan anymore, ridiculous. They notice that Mark Vientos is not necessarily an integral part of this plan, but he's still going to be here. He's in AAA. All right. The plan for the New York Mets is clear this year. They have a ton of guys on one-year deals or expiring contracts. So in the offseason, they're going to have tons of decisions to make. They're going to be able to be in the hunt to sign big free agents, mix in some of the young talent that is just about ready, right? So they're going to have the plan intact. Their plan is perfectly in place still. All right, so to say that this is not following the plan and almost basically went as far to say that this just gets rid of the plan, I had to listen to it a few times to see if I was missing anything. Mark Vientos is not the only part of this plan. In fact, he's barely a part of this plan.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing here is, like you said, he's trying to make conversation, but he wasn't clear about what the plan is. And if you're looking at bats, like, you're supposed to throw away a season and not give a guy a roster spot on your team because you want to give someone else a stab at that spot, is just bad baseball. We know what JD Martinez is, and we understand that maybe this year is not the year they're going out there and holding up the trophy at the end of October. We know that. But I think having JD Martinez in that lineup betters everyone around you. That's discounting a lot of the pieces with Vientos being on this roster. And maybe he goes down to AAA, and that's fine. But learning from a player with experience of playing in big moments. And yeah, you're taking away at bats from younger players, but there's also the quiet parts of understanding the approach, watching the day-to-day, watching film on pitchers. Like, these guys that have been in the league are so valuable for the younger players. And not to mention, you're trying to build a case for keeping Pete Alonso here in Queens. If you finally have protection and Pete Alonso feels supported, here we are now with JD Martinez giving protection that he's never had. So the project here, the plan is, let's keep Pete Alonso in a Met uniform for the next 10 years. And JD Martinez makes it more attractive. Even in the media, if this doesn't go past 1 year, at least you're showing an effort to help Pete Alonso not be out there flailing away without protection.
Well, guess what else this lets you do? This lets you fairly evaluate Pete Alonso and how good he actually is. All right. This is the best protection he's ever had. So at the end of this season, you should know who this guy is as far as Pete Alonso is. Okay. Is he the 215 hitter he was last year? And yes, he hits tons of bombs. 40 bombs is almost automatic for him. Or are we going to see him hit around, I don't know, 250, 260, 270, because he's better protected still with those home run numbers? If he's hitting 215 again, even with 40 home runs, I don't know if we can give him $30 million a year like the projections are kind of saying, right? I don't know if we can sign the guy for 7, 8, 9 years, okay? I don't think we can. He's already close to 30, I believe. So this is a good thing in a million ways. And not to play the negative side of things, but if we look at it, say the season does not go well, we're kind of protected that way too, because now you have a bunch of one-year players that are going to be valuable to other teams that you can continue to build the system with and free some more money. You don't think someone might want to trade for JD Martinez at the deadline if he's hitting well, if the season's not going well? Some of the pitchers that are on one-year deals, if they're throwing well and the season's not going well, it all makes sense. Honestly, I've never bought more into David Stearns and Steve Cohen's plan than I have right now. So just sorry, but it's an idiotic take.
No, and the thing is, too, that it's not like they paid full price. They waited for it to come. The market completely evaporated for JD Martinez, where they had – we watched the same thing happen with Jordan Montgomery. Cody Bellinger had the same thing where you had teams. How could you not buy him at that price? That production, take away the name, what we got from JD Martinez in 2023, if you can replicate that for that price at $15 million a year instead of he was looking for 60-plus on an annual deal, it's a no-brainer for anybody. And I understand there is a plan in place to build, but there's no guarantees in baseball that Vientos is going to work out to be the person you are. You're not going to forego it, because what happens if that doesn't work out? You can't put all your eggs in that basket. You have to look for the immediate here. The fans have to be pacified to want to enjoy going to Citi Field on a daily basis. You're asking a lot from a fan base that was already feeling a lot of negativity going into the season with the injuries, as you mentioned, to Senga, and looking at what this season was supposed to be, watching what they did last year. So there's been a lot of disappointment, and Steve Cohen is trying their best to balance both sides, and I think they did a perfect job of it.
Yeah, they were never going to punt this season, and nor should they have. I feel like they've threaded the needle of, you know, waiting to spend the money when they want to, still having a competitive team, and also now building a really good farm system. They've kind of made all of this work where they still should be competitive this year. And I don't know. I just think you can't just punt any season when you have guys like Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor in their prime. You cannot waste middle years of their prime. So to see this move, I was very happy with it. Excited to see him there.
Agree with you. We'll be back next week talking about the bit outside take, but we're going to get into our next segment. First time we're ever doing this with an honor of Mr. Rose, bets that we like. So next week I'll have a different bumper for that. I do have a Pete Rose inspired bumper that I'll have prepared. There'll always be some tinge of wrestling happening on this podcast, and that bumper will be appropriate with Pete Rose and potentially getting Tombstone in a chicken suit. But this will be a segment.
Tune in for that.
Yeah, tune in for that. If you're going to tune in for anything, just tune in for that. But this will be a bet between the hosts, or a bet that we're eyeing for the upcoming set of games. We're going to check on the past week's bet. Obviously, we don't have bets to talk about. We didn't do it last week. But Devin, I'll let you take the lead here for a season-long bet and also what you're looking forward to the games happening tomorrow night on Friday.
Okay, so I'll start with the season-long stuff. Obviously, these are tricky. I mean, you got to wait so long to see if you're actually in it. And if someone you bet on gets hurt, it's over very quickly. But I thought one that caught my eye, Freddie Freeman to lead the league in RBIs is at plus 900. He's hitting in the three hole behind Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani. Period. Stop. That's a great bet in my mind. And then the other one, Ellie De La Cruz to lead the league in stolen bases. He's at plus 600. I want to say he's either third or fourth as far as in the projections. I think they have Estory Ruiz and who's the kid in the Cardinals that just got promoted? 94 stolen bases last year. I'm blanking on his name.
Nolan Gorman, you talk about?
No. The fast little kid. Anyway, we'll get it. But yeah, he had 94 stolen bases last year in AAA, and he is now up with the Cardinals because of Dylan Carlson's injury. But anyway, those two are at the top, and obviously for a good reason. Ellie, I just think there's been so many games where he steals two or three bases in those games, so I think for him to be the third person on there is decent odds to take a guy like that. So those are my season long ones. And then for tomorrow night, I gotta go with the Dodgers again. I'd take him with the 1.5 spread instead of just money line to kind of increase the money back. It's Bobby Miller versus Zach Thompson tomorrow night. To me, it seems like a mismatch. 90% of the money is on the Dodgers, which does scare me away a little bit. But I expect Bobby Miller to be great this year. Zach Thompson is only there because of Sonny Gray's injury. I'm not sure why he's starting the second game of the season, if I'm being completely honest, but he is. So that would be my tomorrow night bet.
So looking at my season-long stuff, I didn't put anything official in, but some season-long stuff that I do like is favorites for Rookie of the Year, as I mentioned before, Wyatt Langford in the AL. FanDuel doesn't have that available right now, but if you have DraftKings, that is available. At pretty reasonable odds, putting it down for Wyatt Langford. And I think he's off to a good start today, being on base a whole lot. But as far as the immediate on Friday, I'm looking at the Yankee game against Houston. They're back at it at 8:10 p.m. Carlos Rodon, Don't have the exact line. They didn't make it available yet, but I do have him going over 5.5 Ks. So if you have that available where they usually have the split of 4, 6, and 8, I would grab 6 Ks for Carlos Rodon, and I would probably parlay that with an Aaron Judge home run. I like the way what he was looking at the ball. He did not have the offensive production, but I liked his presence at the plate. I think we see a home run from Judge tomorrow. So either take it separately or make the odds a little bit longer by having a parlay with it. But I'm confident the Yankees offense is going to come out swinging tomorrow as well, because you got to look at the game that they had today. And I always look at the way things flow. Today was considered a loss. That was already a loss here. So watching the offense, who largely had to snatch the victory out of defeat here and the pitching held on, I fully expect Judge to come out swinging, especially with a little bit of a quiet day that we saw on his end today. I think it's going to be a battle and a healthy competition between Judge and Soto. Of course, Judge got a hit today, but struck out twice. I do like the way he was looking at the ball, but the fact that Juan Soto is seeing so many pitches in front of him, I think the number was like 30-something pitches in his at-bats, is just unreal. And so for Judge to have an insight into, you know, what's being thrown in front of him, he's going to have a lot of looks, and I think Judge is going to have a good time hitting behind Juan Soto, and especially Christian Javier, who's been obviously a victim of the long ball for quite some time here. I think Christian Javier has a chance to dominate, but I think Judge goes deep tomorrow.
I could see it. And by the way, just to go back to the Cardinals thing, it's Victor Scott. Victor Scott is the kid that's up. Gotcha. In my head, it was Victor Cruz, and I know Victor Cruz is the football player, so I didn't want to say the Victor part because all I could think was Cruz. So, but it's Victor Scott, so sorry about that. Apologies to him. Okay, moving on to the next segment, I guess, right?
Yeah, we'll check in on those bets on next week's episode to see how we did. We'll keep that in mind with the document living here. Obviously, the season-long bets, we're not going to be able to have conclusion for that, but we're going to try to make some day-to-day bets so we can, you know, not that we're trying to skew you into making some money, whatever. It's just a friendly banter that we're going to have between the two of us. But we're going to get to our next segment talking about what's happening down the farm with the minor issue. So, Devin, it feels like we can have a full show on just prospects and do an hour and a half on just what's happening in all these minor league systems. And it was hard to really narrow it down to one player, but there is someone who's very exciting. If you follow us, as I mentioned before, at Table Setters Pod on X, Devin's posting a lot of clips, retweeting a lot of stuff that's happening over there and putting some emphasis on what's happening not only in NCAA, but what's happening in the farm. But this guy is a very exciting prospect that you want to talk about.
Yeah, and I think this is how we'll do it. Just kind of one guy that's in one of our heads leading up to the show, we'll just go with that guy. So this week, maybe it's because he's on my fantasy team and he's actually hurt right now or he's out. This is Orion Kerkering. And I know we're cheating a little bit. I do think of him as a prospect still, but he did have some major league action last year and even some playoff action. So he's been thrust into it, but still doesn't have a ton of innings under his belt. So I think it's fair to put him here in the minor issue segment. So before I get into all the big time details here, so he was placed on the IL. It was to be expected. He had a battle with the flu during spring training, and he was just kind of MIA for a little while. But today when they placed him on the IL, people were a little afraid because they put a designation was a forearm strain. So that scared a lot of people. But apparently there's a – let me get to it. It was a tweet here. It said from Matt Gelb. It said, Phillies used a right forearm strain designation to put Orion Kerkering on the IL. Rob Thompson said nothing has changed. Kerkering was up to 98 miles per hour in a minors game yesterday. Expected to return April 9th. Will pitch at AAA this weekend. My first thing was, that's okay. That's okay to just put four. Anyway, that's not a topic we want to talk about, but I just thought that was interesting that they just put forearm strain for a guy that doesn't have a forearm strain. Anyway, so my whole thing with him is, will he be the Phillies closer at some point? To be a closer for that team, who obviously is one of the better teams in the majors, the potential is through the roof for this kid, who I think is 22 years old. So some people probably know him very well already from his time with the Phillies in the playoffs, especially in the Braves series last year. He had some big moments. His slider is the pitch everybody talks about. And if you haven't seen it, go look for it. The suggestion would be, maybe we'll try to put a clip on X as well, but Rob Friedman, who is the pitching ninja, if you go to his feed and you just search Orion Kerkering in his feed, there's a bunch of stuff that comes up. I think he even has some college clips of him on there too, from when he was actually in college. So that's worth taking a look at. So anyway, he started last year in low A ball, and then ended up in the Major League Baseball playoffs. So that ascension is incredible. He throws his slider about 80% of the time when he was in the majors last year. His slider is an 80 grade slider. Now, if you're not familiar with the grades of, you know, pitches and tools, when people are prospects, 80 is the highest you can get. And there are very few players with 80 grade tools. To make a comparison, Jackson Holliday's hit tool is a 70 grade, and which is very good, but even his hit grade is not an 80. Devin Williams' changeup is an 80 grade pitch. So if you're looking for another 80 grade pitch, that is one. Kerkering can also throw a 99 mile per hour fastball. Four minor league levels last year, he pitched to a 1.51 ERA with a 39% strikeout rate. Obviously, he would have to prove that rate at the MLB level as well. But if we look at the leaderboard last year for relievers for strikeout rates, Felix Bautista, who we mentioned before, was at the top with 46%, which was way above everyone else. And the next couple of people were around 40%, which Kerkering did at the minor league level. Hader, for example, was right around 39-40%. His whip at the minor league level, this is what I was interested in. Okay, he has this filthy stuff, these pitches with tons of movement, which I'll mention some of the movement in a minute. A lot of those guys that do that, typically their struggle is walks, right? Not being able to find the strike zone certain nights. So when I looked at that part of his game, I was even more excited. His whip at the minor league level was 0.92. He only walked 13 batters in 60 minor league innings across those four levels. In September, he threw three innings at the major league level, struck out six, gave up one run. So very small sample size. Was then thrusted into some big moments in the playoffs. I think it's amazing that he only threw three innings in the regular season and the Phillies felt good enough about him to include him on their playoff roster. I guarantee that doesn't happen all that much. His slider has 12 to 20 inches of horizontal movement. Also throws two variations of a fastball. One people refer to as a sinker since it has 14 to 15 inches of horizontal movement. Other is a two-seamer with 9 to 12 inches of vertical movement and 20 inches horizontal. If you look at Fangraphs had a good recent article on him, too. I know I called out the Pitching Ninja.
Before we went on.
Yeah, so the Pitching Ninja, for clips, definitely go to him. But Fangraphs, the article is very recent. I mean, like a week or two ago. It's called Orion Kerkering Studies for a Doctorate in Sliders. Very well done. A lot of the information I'm telling you right now is from that article, so I want to give them credit for that. So this guy, I'm a Mets fan. So seeing him as a Philly doesn't make me happy. But as a baseball fan, I just think we could see this guy as the next premier closer if everything works out. And I'm excited for him to, you know, get healthy and get back up here to see how they use him. I don't think he's going to be used as a closer right away. But the Phillies last year, it wasn't just Kimbrel that was saving games for them. I want to say there was like 9 or 10 different guys who had saves last year for them. Kimbrel led the way with 20 something, but you know, Alvarado's in the mix. Sir Anthony Dominguez is in the mix. I just think eventually if he pitches the way we know he can, that he's going to force their hand. And I hope he does.
Yeah. And I love what you were talking about before with that dominant slider fastball combination. That's impressive. But what really impressed me was how he jumped four levels from single A Clearwater to the Phillies in only a few months. And that doesn't happen often. There's something special here for him. Hope he gets better. There's some nasty stuff going around this past winter, early spring with flu and, you know, COVID type of stuff. So people have been down and out. So I'm hoping that, you know, if the flu was enough to designate him on the aisle where he couldn't get up. We know how serious that can be. You can't work out. You can't eat. You're weak. The fact that they used a forearm strain probably scared a lot of fantasy players and scared a lot of, you know, just people that are excited for the Phillies. But I think there is a blind spot for that type of stuff for the way designated IL stints have to start. So I think there's nothing more to it. It seems like all articles and he's cleared for go once the IL stint is over. And we'll see what he can bring to the table. Because as we said before, he pitched in some really big pivotal spots for the Phillies last year with limited experience. He's only going to have a full season of experience behind him now. And then on top of it, a full spring training. So, you know, I understand he was battling some of the stuff he's been going on with the flu, but for the most part, he went into this season thinking he's going to be probably a part of the big league roster. And that's a different approach. And who would have thought watching him jump four levels in 2023 to get to where he's at now? It's high praise for a dude that looks like he's going to be a special pitcher in the MLB for a long time to come.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing that can happen. A guy comes out of nowhere and just forces his way from one level to the next. A guy that maybe wasn't a big-time prospect, and he just finds something and runs with it. And you see that every once in a while. And I think he's an example of that.
So we'll keep you guys updated on what's going on with Kirkering and just check him out. And I think once the IL stint is over, he'll be back probably next week with the Phillies. And we'll see where he slots in. I think at this point it's going to be probably in the bullpen, but with the stuff he has, like, he's pretty versatile. You could use him in some high leverage spots, or maybe they go out there and try to make him a starter. You know, that's the other thing. I mean, maybe they try to do that. Who knows? But we know he's going to be playing a big part if the Phillies are going to be doing something in October. But we're going to get to coming around third. We're going to kind of wrap up the show here, preview next week, and give our final thoughts on what happened in the week of baseball. All right, Devin, as we wrap up tonight's show, I know you wanted to touch a little bit on fantasy baseball, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it, because outside of just how exciting opening day is as a fan of whatever team you're rooting for, fantasy baseball has dawned upon us. And I know we talked about the Korea series, a lot of seasons kicked off with that, but this is the official start watching full slates of lineups come in. You guys use Yahoo or whatever app you use, you see those green check marks for the pitchers, you see the green circles with the batting spot and the order. It's exciting. You get to finally see the team that you've been looking at for a long period of time take the field, watching points accrue if you're in head-to-head, watching some of those categories fill out if you're in roto. But fantasy has been off to a good start here, and it's a grind. It's a marathon, but it's nice to see some of these players accruing some value on our rosters.
Yeah, so I thought it was important to kind of, like, you know, go into some fantasy stuff every once in a while, even if it's quick, just because, honestly, that's kind of where this podcast became an idea, all right, because Steve and I are super passionate about the fantasy league we are in. Shout out for the fame. And it eventually has turned into this. So anyway, for fantasy, a guy on my team I was excited about today was Logan Webb. If you didn't see his spring, it was a mess. I think he might have had the highest ERA among any starter who went out multiple times, 10 or 11, something like that. So I was sweating a little bit. I've already lost Garrett Cole from my team to his injury. Logan Webb's my other supposed to be dependable guy. And I think today just kind of showed us once again that spring training, sometimes people are working on stuff and their stats don't mean anything. He went out there six innings, typical Webb, threw well into the 90s count of pitches. He's one of the only guys who I feel like would be allowed to do that on day one, even under a new manager this year. So I was happy with that. Cruised through the first four innings. Fifth inning, ran into trouble. Bases loaded, no outs. Still got out of there without much damage and ended up throwing a quality start. So for me, Logan Webb was the fantasy guy that I wanted to kind of give a shout out to for showing us we're pretty sure he's still the Logan Webb that we know and love.
For me, on the positive side of things, I'm going to go with Bo Bichette, because nothing really pops off the scorecard as far as the box score goes, going 2-for-4, 2 RBIs and a run scored. What really impressed me was the advanced stats of he hit three balls 95 miles per hour over. He's obviously hitting third in a solid Blue Jays lineup. I think Bo Bichette, there was a lot of praise heaped upon him in the fantasy circles where he was taking close to number one overall. Some of that expectation has been downplayed this year, and I think there's less for him, especially in that lineup, there's less pressure to carry that team with the healthy Blue Jays lineup. I was excited what I saw from here, and you almost forget how good this dude actually is. I was very excited for him. On the negative side of things, I want to just, you know, my Zach Eflin checker, I believe, I think he was going to be, for me, I predicted him to win the AL Cy Young, not off to a good start. He looked great from the jump. I mean, coming out there, striking out five guys over the course of four innings, he looked okay. And then the wheels sort of fell off. If you were watching the game, velocity went down, leaving balls over the plate. And we had the Blue Jays really squaring him up. We saw George Springer hit a home run. As I said before, Bo Bichette was squaring him up. Went 5 2/3 and kind of fell apart. Gave up six earned runs where it could have went the other way. Could have had a quality start. Could have walked away six innings pitch with three earned runs and be like, okay, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. But the Rays gave him every opportunity to stay out there. We know the Rays have a quick trigger finger to pull somebody out of the game. They let him out there. And unfortunately, Eflin couldn't get out of it. He just got a little fatigue. And that could just be beginning of the year. But there was a little worry for me because I watched. He was very hittable at the end of that game.
Yeah, I mean, previous to his Rays stint that started last year, I do think back when he was on the Phillies, I thought of him as a guy who, you know, really good strikeout type of guy. But I always thought of him as like a five and fly guy. And when you see a start like this, you kind of worry that maybe there's still a little bit of that in him. But again, it's the Rays, and the Rays always seem to find a way to get the most out of their pitchers. So I would take some solace in that he's still a Tampa Bay Ray, and they usually can fix these things. And like you said, he was cruising for a little while, looking like the guy that, you know, you thought he'd be.
So as we kind of say goodbye for the week here, Devin, anything you want to get in, talk about the Instagram page, some Twitter stuff, some initiatives you're taking part in social media to get the conversation going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to do a little bit of everything on there, and I just want as many comments and as much banter as we can get. We're going to throw some college highlights of high prospects up there every once in a while. And then as far as Major League Baseball, we'll talk about the young guys. We'll talk about the vets. We'll talk about hitting. We'll talk about pitching. Everything. We'll talk about fantasy. As you can see, we got a little bit of sports betting in there. So we want this show to be hitting every facet of baseball. A lot of people kind of find a niche and go with it, whether it be prospects or the team that is their hometown team. We're trying to cover it all. All right, so anything that you feel like talking about, our Twitter page, our Instagram page, and you know, listening to us on Spotify and Apple and everywhere else, this is the podcast and this is the program for doing or talking about whatever it is in baseball that you want to talk about. And as far as on a personal note, my team didn't play today because of rain, so I'll leave it with this. Let's go Mets.
Love it. And again, you guys can follow us at Table Setters Pod on IG, at Table Setters Pod on X. We'll be dropping our next episode, I believe, on Wednesday morning. So when you wake up on Wednesday morning, you'll have all the breakdown of everything that happened this weekend on the first weekend of a full slate of baseball games. Yanks will be in Arizona. We're going to see Juan Soto and Corbin Carroll on opposite sides of the field, which will be exciting. A lot of great matchups in baseball. And I hope everyone had a great opening day. And we appreciate you listening to everything on this podcast. Again, interact with us. Send us some messages if you disagree with us. Ask us some questions. Support the show. We'll be back here next week talking all things baseball. But until next time, we'll talk to you after a while.